Welcome to Bush and Banner, hosted by me, Diana Carmella, and Jennifer Mabus.
Hey, Diana.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Okay, so we wanted to do an episode where we chat with somebody about to set off on their first long-distance hike. We're in the month of April right now, and thousands of hikers are gearing up to tackle some of the most challenging hikes across the country. We thought it would be a fun conversation to talk to one. Jen, are you excited to go back to the Pacific Crest Trail today?
I'm always excited to go back to the PCT. It's my like little long-lost lover, I feel like.
It is. It really is.
Diana, who are we talking to today?
All right. So today we are thrilled to welcome Jeffrey Binney to the program. Jeffrey's journey took a profound turn after the loss of his mother to heart disease. Determined to avoid a similar fate, he embarked on a transformative path, challenging himself by conquering one of the most grueling 100-mile ultramarathons. His inspiring experience became the subject of his captivating film, Once is Enough. Today, Jeffrey is not only a resilient figure, but also a gifted motivational speaker and a comedian. Currently, he's gearing up for his next ambitious adventure, hiking the 2,653-mile Pacific Crest Trail. In this episode, Jen's going to offer some insightful advice for his upcoming thru hike, and I'm going to chat with him a little bit about tips for writing a book about an adventure like this. And in addition to his upcoming trek, we're going to dive into Jeffrey's recent expedition to Nepal and India, as well as reminisce about his early days growing up on a pig farm.
Jeffrey is so positive and he has such a great energy. And I love talking to people like that because they're extremely uplifting and inspiring. And this is an absolutely amazing conversation, kind of all over the place. It was like talking to a best friend, you know, at dinner or over drinks. We were just going off on so many tangents and laughing. And that's exactly what we love in these conversations.
Here we go. Let's do this. This is but a mere glimpse into the extraordinary life of the Jeffrey Binney. I know recently you've been a busy guy. You just shared with us before we started recording that you moved from Los Angeles to Colorado. So I know your life has been pretty chaotic, but we really appreciate you being here today.
Yeah.
And before we get started, I just wanted to mention to the listeners, I met you through a mutual friend. And I gotta ask, because I'm really curious, how do you know Megan?
Yeah, she's gone on a couple of my trips. I've hosted trips. It's like there's a company, there's a few companies doing it. The biggest one is called Trova Trip. And it's kind of an interesting business model. They essentially like use influencers and Z-list celebrities to like market travel. And it's great for the creator because you get to meet people who follow you. And you know, the first couple of trips I was like, oh Lord, like who's gonna end up on these trips? Like this is gonna be
creepy.
I'm sure this is gonna be so complicated to manage all these personalities. And of course there are lots of different personalities, but it's a really cool feeling as a content creator because everybody's been awesome. With like very few exceptions, everyone has just been like phenomenal. And it's really cool as a creator to like to know like, hey, you can pluck random people out of these hundreds of thousands of people and like they're all cool as shit. They all like we're all on the same vibe. Like even if we come from totally different walks of life, like I don't know, it's really rewarding to get to see that. And we're doing some cool fun, like some of them are pretty physically challenging trips. We did a Nepal trip this fall and it was wild. It was insane. It was so difficult. And it's so cool to get to like be there for, you know, that was the hardest thing that a lot of the people on that trip will ever do in their life. It's so cool to like be there for it, to know that like, you know, I was like part of the impetus. Like it's like shockingly rewarding. And it started so selfishly because my reward is getting to travel for free.
Yeah, so
in the beginning, that's what I was looking for. But it didn't take long. The first trip was Yellowstone. And on that very first trip, I realized how scary it is for a lot of people to travel. I realize people who don't travel as much as I do have a lot of really justifiable fear around it. So it's also fun, like, you know, like being everyone's, I'm not the guide, but, you know, being able to say, hey, we're going to be fine. Like, you're going to get right. there. Your flight may be delayed, but you're going to get there and we're going to yeah. meet up with you and it's all going to be fine. It's all yeah. going to work out.
You have two trips, upcoming trips. Where are you going next?
Yeah. So I have a super non-physical, just we're enjoying Portugal and food and wine and that's in October. Yeah, we're doing Lisbon to is it Algarve, I think is how you pronounce it. Just along the coast. And then also in the fall, a trail running trip to Olympic National Park outside of Seattle. So we start in Seattle.
We both absolutely love Olympic National Park.
I've never been.
You've never been. Okay.
Ever.
I lived in downtown Seattle for a while, and then I lived on the side west of Seattle, Bremerton, Silverdale, Port Orchard. Those are the cities right next to Olympic National Park. So okay. So Diana hiked through it on the Pacific Northwest Trail. So
right.
A little bit about us is, I don't know if you know, we are international travelers. We love traveling, but we're also through hikers. So Diana's through hiked the Pacific Northwest Trail. I've hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. And then her and I together hiked the Tahoe Rim Trail. So we're kind of in that world. But Olympic National Park, I just told Diana not too long ago, I actually have a tattoo of it on my rib cage. She didn't know about.
Cool.
Yeah, I love it. It's a great place.
The love is real for her. Cool. Oh, yeah. She has a soft spot for Olympic National Park. What did you think of Nepal?
It was such a wild trip because I had some India time on there as well. A friend who was going on my Nepal trip, she's Brazilian, has lived in the US for decades, but she has wanted to see the Taj Mahal since she was a little girl. And she was like, do you want to go with me like on just a whirlwind 48-hour stop to just
yes.
you know, stop in Delhi, take the train to Agra and see it? And I was like, yes. So we did. And India was tough. Have you spent some time in India?
No,
would love to, but
yeah.
Well, you know, I was warned that Delhi is kind of like the New York City of India. And I lived in New York for 8 years and I'm so glad I did. It's a magical place, but it wasn't for me long term. And a friend had warned me that Delhi might not be my favorite vibe in India. And it was challenging, like for lots of reasons. And I was so conflicted afterward. I don't think I've ever traveled internationally where I haven't said, oh my God, I'd love to live here. I wonder what's for sale. I wonder, can Americans just buy, you know, and that was the first time that I was like, I think I'm okay. And I hate that. I hate that. Like, I know that I love India. I know. I just like, now I'm like obsessed with going back and like finding
something else.
Like finding what I like. Cause I know like that just drives me crazy. I know it's a magical country with so much history. The food. I mean, I would say Nepal and India, I'm vegetarian. Like not a single meal that I did not absolutely adore. I've never felt better. Like, you know, I didn't have the processed food temptations that we have here. But that you ask how it was Nepal. Nepal was incredible. Nepal was, I felt like the people were very different from the people in India in that they were just a little more, life was a little, you know, as chaotic as Kathmandu can be, life was just a little bit more simple and, calm, it seemed. Now if you were in the heart of Kathmandu during rush hour, you wouldn't believe that, but comparatively speaking,
you had some car problems. I saw
that.
We had, it was just the wildest adventure, like so many things. I mean, first of all, just to get there is, I think it was 12 or 13 hours total of driving. Because on the way back, you can fly, but on the way there, you can fly, but because of the Himalayas make the weather so unpredictable, the rate of canceled flights is very, very, very high in that area. And if you don't enter the conservation areas the day that your permit is for, you don't get, so they just can't risk it. So 13-hour drive on the craziest, bumpiest roads.
I heard the roads are like super dangerous. Like you're on these cliffs sometimes and you're just in like this small little bus type of thing. And a lot of them, I guess there's no rules in certain areas and you're just like, I don't know.
It is wild. It is chaos is chaos is an understatement. I mean, you know, most Americans, if you didn't grow up in a city, when you go to New York City, the chaos of the honking, yes, and, you know, that feels wild to a lot of people. It's that times 47. Wow, like, yeah, it's the chaos of New York. Just, I mean, it's wild.
Yeah.
But it all works. The intersections of streets are absolute madness, mm-hmm, but it works. Like, the rates of accidents are shockingly low. Like, yeah, somehow they just have an understanding that this is how the chaos works. And
yeah,
it works.
Maybe more people are focused because they know they have to focus. We're here, everyone's on their phones and, you know, applying lipstick because it's, you know, we have all these strict rules.
A red light. Oh, let me apply full makeup. Yeah. And then, I'll get to go.
Mm-hmm. Do a little TikTok live stream, while driving. It's fine.
Yeah.
Well, here's something that you might find hilarious, if we want to talk about some large white man privilege. India, I think, was one of the first times I could ever say that I wouldn't have felt comfortable just venturing out alone.
Really?
Okay.
And that's not something that I say very often, right, as a large adult man.
Yeah.
So that was a weird feeling.
what was it in particular that made you feel unsafe? Just like getting robbed?
Yeah, like, people are very, like, they do not keep to themselves, and I would not go unnoticed on the street. Almost everybody I would walk by would talk to me. I would have no idea what they were saying.
Yeah.
If they followed, like, I wouldn't know. Like, I just wouldn't know. And and my Midwestern's politeness would probably get me in trouble, you know? I think I would be ripe for the picking.
You're a 6 foot two ginger. They're just like, ooh, I gotta touch him.
Yeah. Well, and there's it's also complicated to travel there, at least as an American, because our money goes so far there. And, you know, for really reasonable prices, we were staying in some of the best hotels in Delhi, seeing, mm-hmm, like, that side of Delhi. But you can't leave the hotel without seeing, like, how extreme the opposite is. And so it's also hard. There's a lot of poverty, and everyone's asking for money, and it's in all different ways. It was, you know, there are beggars on the street, but people will also vary, you know, with it, won't blink twice at asking you for a tip if they held the door open for you or something like that. Like, they're very assertive, mm-hmm, in that way.
Yeah.
I think the best way I can describe it is, like, it started to feel like I had been on a used car lot for 2 days.
Far
too
long.
You know that uncomfortable feeling when you're like, no, I'm not interested. And like, you know, it gets, I felt like I had that weird knot in my stomach the whole time I was there.
People want you for, you know, what you can give them money wise or whatever. And that's not super fun.
It's not fun. No.
No.
I gotta say, though, the way you present, like, because you're funny, you're hysterical, and the way you travel, it makes me, you make, like, a scary situation seem, like, kind of funny, and, like, I'm actually enjoying watching this. And I was, in doing research, I was going through your Instagram and just rewatching a bunch of stuff, and I die of laughter. Like, for some of your clips, I laugh so hard. I don't laugh on people's Instagram posts. It's not very normal. One of your clips that it's at the top of your Instagram page where you're doing the dirty dancing dance, crossing a bridge.
Yeah.
I was laughing. Yeah. I was in my bed last night dying of laughter. And I just want to know, how did you kind of get into comedy? Like, what drew you to comedy? Because your whole brand is about fun travel, but you take it to another comedic level that is so entertaining. So I just want to know, where did that kind of stem from?
Well, I just keep talking. I don't want this to end.
Oh my God. I'm bowing down to you.
We do that.
What
everyone,
else?
Though.
Tell me more. You know, I was super focused on music when I was a little kid. My mom got me in classical piano lessons when I was 5 years old, and I was super serious about it. And then in high school, that kind of transitioned into more singing, and I discovered community theater, and I decided to major in musical theater in college. And so in musical theater, I was always playing the comedic roles, you know. And so that drew me to comedic acting. And then when I got to New York, I moved to New York after college, and my friends were all doing improv, and I was like, oh, I should try improv. And so I did the improv program at Upright Citizens Brigade in New York. And I loved improv, but I wasn't amazing at it. I was fine, but I wasn't amazing. But that led me to stand up, and suddenly all the bells went off. I was like, oh, yeah. Like this. I loved, I'm not typically a control freak, but I loved the fact that I was in control, not in control of everything, that I was responsible for everything, which is a double-edged sword, because, you know, when a set went really, really, really well, it was all me. Like, I wrote the jokes, I delivered the jokes, I picked out what I wore, I decided how to say them. Like, it was all me. On the other end of the spectrum, when you bomb, it's also all you, know, it's all you can't blame anyone else. And that's an interesting feeling coming from the theater world, because, you know, in the theater world, don't worry, the reviewers will rip you apart. But so much of it is out of your control. You're not in control of your costumes. You're really not in that much control of where you're going on the stage and when. That's, you know, fairly controlled. The set you didn't control, though you didn't write the music or the script. So anyway, that really drew me to stand up. And then my mom passed away of heart disease. And that is what led me to running and the outdoors. I had gotten into riding my bike around New York City. Cycling is a shockingly efficient way to get around New York City. I could get most places either as fast or faster than the subway on my bike. So it sounds scary, but they also have a really pretty decent network of bike lanes. So a lot of the time you don't have to be by cars. Anyway, I do not work for the New York City Bicycle Commission, I promise.
I would get hit the first day and it would be over. So I'd probably stick to the subway.
Well, you know, the thing is, they're expecting bikes. So it's actually not as scary. I think I'd be more scared to ride my bike on the road in my little hometown in Missouri than I would in New York, because nobody's expecting you there. I've gotten where have I taken us? What was the question?
We love this. Oh, it was about comedy. But segue, because I watched your documentary Once Is Enough. And I loved how you filmed that or edited it, because throughout it you are basically doing a stand-up bit. Is that what you would call it? You're doing a show.
Yeah.
And weaving it in with your story with beautiful, video. And first of all, I loved it. You made me cry.
Yeah, Jen said she couldn't stop crying. And I was like,
I might just be hormonal, but I definitely was crying, feeling extremely inspired by you. So first of all, thanks for putting your story out there. To give the listeners a little summary, and I'll let you expand on it, but basically this documentary, Once Is Enough, is about the story of how your mother, when I think got diagnosed with heart failure when you were pretty young, like 11 years old, that's correct. Later, after many years, passes away, and you are sitting in the waiting room and you get a trail running magazine, and your first thought, you read this Leadville 100 Ultra Marathon, and you're like, I'm going to do that. Yeah. So can you expand on that?
I love how you're telling him about his – this is very entertaining.
How's this going?
Spot on.
And then the documentary is about you training for this ultra marathon and then, everything that happens after. So can you tell us a little bit more about why you wanted to make that film and, let's start there. Why you wanted to make the film?
What's it about? Because I couldn't get it from Jen. I'm just kidding. No.
Yeah. Well, I discovered trail running while my mom was in the ICU. That's where it started, as you said. And I was just so, there was no question about why she was dealing with heart failure. It was lifestyle. She had a poor diet and, was not active. And that's the risk. And I was on the exact same train tracks headed in the same direction. And it was just a desperate attempt to avert death. It was really straightforward in my brain too. I was like, you know what, you're 26 years behind her. And honestly, you've misbehaved even more than her. So you might be lucky to make it that long. So I dove headfirst into ultra running, and I was a mama's boy, and I wasn't doing great. I'm not a talk about it kind of person. My friends know something's wrong when they haven't heard from me for a while. If I disappear into the woods for a few days with not a lot of explanation, that's how they know something's up. And that's how I like it. That's how I like to, I really like to sort things out, on my own. And so, you know, running just became therapy, and all I wanted to do was run, and I wanted to write jokes and tell them, but I really wasn't interested in anything else. I was really antisocial with my friends, and this gave me I think relatively healthy obsession to focus on. It definitely wasn't probably cheaper than therapy, but it was probably the best therapy that I could have had, because, you know, also the whole film at the end of the day is to honor my mom. And so that was really cathartic also, you know, just to go through that whole process. And, and it was really, you know, everyone wants to talk about, oh, what was it like to run a 100-mile ultramarathon? That must have been so difficult. Obviously, yes. But honestly, I think the more difficult marathon was the filmmaking process. It's absolutely brutal. There's no reason why anyone in their right mind would try to make an indie film. It worked out for us. But if I hadn't had a topic that was so close to my heart, I don't think the project ever would have gotten finished. But there's no way I could have given up on it and not been absolutely racked with guilt. So that was a really great motivator, that quitting wasn't really an option.
I love that. There's a lot of people who are probably listening that want to do something big, whether it's a through hike, an ultramarathon, climbing Mount Everest, whatever, just name it. And, you know, Diana and I have talked about this a lot in the past, but a lot of our insecurities and the people listening, their insecurities are holding them back. And they think, I can never do that. I'm not the person that can ever do that. That kind of activity and goal and adventure are for other people. Now, watching your film, your sister and two of your friends, Annie and Amy, both, all three of them said in the film, he's not athletic, never been interested in the outdoors. You know, they gave this image of you, but now look at what you have done. And so I want you to please, you know, tell us what it was like from going from someone who was not athletic, not interested in the outdoors, to being able to overcome all the hurdles to become a 100-mile finisher. What was that like?
Yeah, well, you know, I talk about it a bit in the film, but I remember the very first trail run that I went on. It was, you know, I say in the film, I was in the waiting room. I picked up a Trail Runner magazine. Thought it was hilarious that there was I thought, what a specific niche. That is hilarious that there's enough people who are this stupid to warrant a magazine. And we had just got terrible hospital news. It was just the worst of news. And I didn't know what to do other than go to a running store. I know the stupidest running shoe I could have purchased. Bought running shoes and went to a state park and just went for a run, and was immediately hooked. I was immediately, number one, you know, nobody was watching my fat jiggle. Nobody was timing me. I felt like a little kid, literally jumping over logs and like getting muddy. So I felt so silly and playful. And I think like the biggest thing for those like 37 minutes, I didn't think about my mom and my problems. And so it was instantaneous that I got hooked. And what was the question? Am I getting close to answering it?
It was just about how can the people who are sitting there thinking, I can never be an athlete or whatever, do something as extreme and athletic as what you did?
So I think for me, You know, ultra running is an adaptive sport. It sounds ridiculous to be able to run 100 miles, but it's about just pushing yourself a little bit further than you did yesterday. It turns out if you keep doing that over and over and over and over again for a year, for a year and a half, you end up running 20, 30, 50 mile races. You would never do a training run anywhere near 100 miles. The recovery that it would take would negate the benefits. It would make much more sense to do more medium length runs that don't require, you know, a week off after. Anyway, I'm boring you, but that's how it's done. And it's what allows people like me, really unexpected athletes, to be able to do something like that, because it's not about achieving one huge thing in all one go. It's about staying consistent enough to keep biting off a little bit more day by day until you end up to the point where you're ready for a 100 mile ultra marathon. There's the brick wall analogy, where if you only have one swing at a brick wall with a huge sledgehammer, is there any chance one swing with one person is going to take down that wall? No. But if you give someone a pickaxe and give them an unlimited amount of time to sit there and chip away at it, they don't even have to chip away at the whole wall. They just have to weaken it to the point where then it all collapses in, and then it so exponentially builds. And it happens with running too. It feels so slow in the beginning, but then you're like, oh wow. I remember so distinctly, I was in Utah. I was doing a training run, and it was one of my longest training runs before the Wasatch 100. And I did a 30-mile training run in the Wasatch Mountains and finished. Yeah. And I felt okay. Like I wasn't ruined. Yet. I wasn't angry. I wasn't, and that was just why. It was wild. Like to go for a 30-mile run and it not be that big of a deal. It was just such a moment for me. It was the only time it ever happened, but it was a cool moment nonetheless.
Yeah. And we're going to get into this soon, but you know, same thing when people ask about through hiking. If I thought about me hiking, you know, 2,600, 2,700 miles across the country, I would immediately be like, I can't do that. There's no way that I'm capable of doing that.
Jenna's little legs. Just remember that too. She's these little legs. So I wouldn't even think so either.
So when people would ask me, like, how did you get over that, you know, mental feat? Because I think a lot of it, it's this mentality where we put ourselves in these little boxes and we say, we can't do that. That's impossible. I just had to think about it. Sometimes not even as day by day. It was like, let me make it to lunch, or, you know, let me hike these 6 miles and then I'll reevaluate my life. And that's how I overcame the struggles and the huge, like, mountain of I had ahead of me, was just taking it step by step by step. And it sounds so cheesy and cliche, but I really think it's true. Because if you were like, I'm going to run 100 miles in 30 hours, that's stupid and crazy. Who does something like that? But if you build up, my first day on trail, I think I did like 6, 7, 8 miles and I was so sore the next day. But then down the line, I'm doing 30, 35, 40 miles a day. I'm doing good. I'm okay. And it just, you have to be patient with yourself. I think that's the biggest thing, is you have to have patience.
Yeah. Jeffrey, you're doing the PCT, right?
Yeah.
This is happening. Okay. Hey, yes. So this is... I mean, this is great because Jen did it. I mean, I don't believe her, but she says she did it. So she did it.
She took some pictures at the end.
Yeah, I saw like a photo. So, but yeah, I mean, this is great because, you know, you could pick her brain or anything you want to know about it, because, she paid attention when she did that.
I'm the only one who's ever completed the Pacific Crest Trail. So I'm the only person you should ask.
How lucky to be in this room with you.
Yeah, you can bow down to me now.
Absolutely.
It was all AI. She never was there.
So now moving from, you know, ultra marathoning and through hiking are actually very closely related. A lot of people keep crossing over. However, I've noticed more people through hike and then get into ultra marathoning, but you're kind of doing it this other way. So yeah, explain why you wanted to hike the Pacific Crest Trail.
You know, I am... since I was a little kid, have just been drawn to ridiculous things. Like, you know, it sounds ridiculous that I would choose to run a 100-mile ultra marathon, considering where I was in my life at that point. But that's actually fairly common for me, for better or worse. That is a hallmark of my personality. And so it's been probably 10 years since I first heard about the Pacific Crest Trail, and it's always... it's always been one of those, oh, wouldn't it be fun to, or someday I would love to, or can you imagine if, but the logistics are just so seemingly insurmountable that I really didn't know if it would ever really be a possibility. Because who cannot work for 5 months? Or, you know, what do you do with your house? What do you do with your pets? What do you do with your spouse? What do you do with your kids? You know, there's so many considerations. And I was like, yeah, you know, it'll probably never happen. But I, you know, I have stumbled into this weird, whatever my career is, but it allows me to make a career out of creating content, doing what I love to do. My husband is down for it. He said yes. So I've got a dog sitter. And I was like, I think I have to do it. I literally may never be in this position again. And so it was a fairly easy decision. And it's just another way, I mean, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, I was never athletic when I was a kid. I played sports, but it was by force and I hated it. I wasn't good at them. The only time I ever ran was every year when we had to run the mile for the presidential physical fitness award or whatever. And even then I would usually walk it and be a total brat. And all of a sudden I found this sport that for some people is about going super fast, but you know, really ultra running for most people is more about surviving. It's more about how can I eat enough to get through this race? How am I going to go to the bathroom? Do I need to sleep? And it's just, it feels, you know, it's not, sure, someone's trying to finish first, but 95% of people, like the goal is just to finish.
Right.
And it's for most people, it's not really about speed. And that was new for me. And it turns out I'm not fast, but I'm kind of a badass. And nobody was more surprised by that news than me. I wasn't aware. But you know, I had always just kind of accepted, like, oh yeah, Jeffrey, he's the like funny, quirky, you know, gay theater kid, the indoor kid who doesn't do sports. And I was that. So I was like, yeah, that's me. I just kind of accepted that that's who I was. And it turns out I'm tougher than I realized. So this is also just, you know, the next frontier for me. It's another huge thing that I can bite off.
And test yourself and you're in good company with that.
In a different way too. I mean, it physically is not going to be any slouch, but I think the thing that is going to be a bigger challenge for me is going to be the social component. I'm on one hand, super extroverted, but on the other hand, very introverted at times. But never 5 months alone. I also think I'm going to be surprised at how social the trail is. I think I'm not the only one doing it. And I think I'm going to be surprised at how social the trail is. But I'm nervous to see how I'm going to fare without... my followers always know when I'm traveling alone or camping alone, because I'm just in my stories all day with random stuff.
Yeah. Like someone talked to me. Yes.
Yeah, they become my husband when he's not there. So the stories will be out of control.
I can't wait. We will literally be following you along. What I liked about the trail is same extrovert, but like to be alone. So I wanted to do the trail like alone because it was something that was important to me. But I made a lot of friends along the way, but there's, I don't know if you've heard the term like a tramily, a trail family. So I'm sure like you can find that. And those people usually hike together the entire way. So you can choose to either be alone or not be alone. And I think that's really cool about the trail. I'm curious though, what you are going into this, what are you thinking? I know you just said the social aspect, but what do you think is going to be harder about a through hike versus an ultra marathon? And what do you think is going to be like easier?
I think one thing, and I feel so silly saying this, but it's the truth.
Going to the bathroom.
I was going to have this conversation.
Just hygiene in general.
Oh, okay.
I'm a very like clean person. I'm a 2 shower a day kind of guy. Yeah. Until a couple of years ago when I got a bidet, I was a like shower every time I poop kind of guy. I talk about it in my film.
Yes,
we got a bidet.
Yep. And I also, you know, this when I was a little kid on the pink. What?
I said you're screwed. I was gonna ask you about pooping in the woods, but we'll get to that after.
Yeah. You're used to a bidet. Just have somebody squirt water up your butt.
They make travel bidets. They make backpacking bidets.
Are you bringing one?
It's called a Kulo Clean. I have five of them because I'm so worried. They're so small and I'm worried that I'm going to lose them. So I have five of them in different places so that I know I don't have to go without one. It's a little plastic thing that goes on top of a water bottle. And then when you squeeze the water bottle a little, it goes psh.
Okay, I'm sorry. We have to derail from the original conversation because in your film, you had to, on your first marathon, you had to poop in a porta potty, and you literally said that you were never going to run another ultra marathon again because you had to poop in a not because it was hard or you're tired or you're in pain, but because you had to poop in a porta potty. And I was laughing. I knew it was serious to you, but I was I was wondering like
serious joke.
How this was gonna go on the trail. So we've got some bidets.
Well, and you know, I noticed this is something I noticed when I was a little kid on the pig farm. I noticed that, you know, when I would have to go help with pigs, we would just be like covered in pig shit. I mean, it's mud, but that's what the mud is. And you just kind of have to accept it. It just, it is what it is. Like you just, that's, you just, it is what it is. There's no avoiding it.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I kind of like it almost enjoyed it as long as then like when the work was done, we went inside, I got clean and I was super clean after it. It was almost fun to get dirty because it was so temporary. Mm-hmm. And that is not, it's, we're going to be in an opposite situation. It's going to be, it's going to be persistent. I'm lucky that, I'm going to be able to change out my shoes and my clothes a little more often than I would otherwise, just because I'm lucky to be sponsored by Brooks Running. So I'll be in their clothes and shoes. So that'll help a little bit. Yeah. I'll be able to change those out a little more often than I would have otherwise.
I think you're going to get used to it. And I think you're going to start to like it being a little dirty. I think, I mean, this is my forecasting. I think you're going to embrace it. It might take a while. Maybe like your last day is when it happens, but I think you're gonna, because I think you have to kind of embrace that kind of thing and sort of enjoy it in a weird sick way. Jen is constantly dirty whenever we hike and she doesn't even shower. Joke.
Yeah. So I've made YouTube videos and I vlogged every day and my trail name is Starburst, but online people would call me Pigpen.
Pigpen.
Because I was so dirty and I embraced it.
She embraced it.
I just need to say I was very outwardly dirt. I mean, there were just, I put sunscreen and then, you know, the dirt would clean. I would literally, it looked like I had a beard. I mean, I was foul, but I was very strict about like armpits and genitals being clean. So people would be like, yeah, she's so dirty. I'm like, okay, I just don't use all my wet wipes on my whole body. I'm washing at the night my face sometimes, but my armpits and my genitals. And that was good enough for me. The rest, I was just like a disgusting walking mud pie. But
the component of mine that makes it extra worrisome is I think I have a really sensitive nose because I often smell things that other people don't smell, or I smell them first. I often smell people before I see them. And I think this happens to everyone. Do you have crazy memory association with smells?
Yes,
it happens to me on a daily basis. Yeah. I'll smell something that immediately takes me somewhere else. Anyway, I think the smell is what's going to be rough for me.
Yeah.
Like I never don't notice somebody else who maybe forgot their deodorant. I notice.
Yeah. So from a personal experience, after a while, I just couldn't smell anybody, but we would get in, like my parents would come help. I live by Lake Tahoe. So the trail, you know, goes near. So my parents would meet me and some hikers and help us, you know, resupply. And my parents would be like, you guys smell revolting.
I think I've watched your YouTube videos. When did you do it? What year did you do it?
2018. So I'm like an old
Yeah, I think so. Did they meet up with you a few different times?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go back and I've seen every pretty sure I've seen every single PCT YouTube channel that has ever existed.
Yes, I watched everybody's vlogs. But
anyway,
there were still some people though. That I could, it was like a different kind of BO. And even if I smelt foul, I'm like, I had to like get away. So yeah, that might be fun. It happens though.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Ooh, also fun. Hitchhiking. Mm-hmm. That's good. Midwestern boys do not hitchhike. Oh. So that's going to be.
Stick out a leg.
Yeah. Just show a little leg. Okay.
Stick out a leg.
Yeah,
that's another fun component because in most times you will have to. Or work something out, you know, whether it's like your husband meeting you instead. But yeah, you might have to work something out.
I remember hitching the first time I hitched. My trail started in Montana and then I walked to the Pacific Ocean. The first time I started with a girlfriend, we had to hitch. We didn't want to put our thumbs out. We were both so scared to do this because we've never done this. And then we needed a ride because we couldn't walk 30 miles out of the way. So she did it and I could just like her hand was shaking and like we're just gone. And this truck pulled over and then ended up being this sweet older woman who like gave us cookies. And it was like such a great experience. And then like by the end of it, I was so like it just became this natural thing that I actually enjoyed, like because I get to meet people. I love meeting new people. So I had one bad one, though, bad one that it was the only time in my life I thought I might die. So you get those every now and then. But
gonna live on the edge. OK, Jeffrey,
live on the edge. Yeah. But I found it quite enjoyable. It was the adventure aspect that I really loved, like. And it was always these old men who had all these stories, and I just love to listen. So I'm like, what do you got for me, you know, Joe?
Cool. And they're accustomed to this, you know, if they live there, they know that you're a thru hiker. So it's not, I know that it's not as scary as it sounds, but did you feel safe? One thing I was thinking about, I was like, I should be conscious of when like hitches are coming up. Just to, if there are any women alone, like, you know, offer to, because that sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
To hitchhike, I mean, as a woman alone.
I do appreciate that. So yeah, there's many times I got into men's cars alone. And I know that sounds silly. My parents hate this, but I had intuition. You know, there's times when I can, you know, maybe feel or if it was okay or not. It was always okay, thankfully. But whenever I could hop into someone's hitch, whether it was even another woman or another man or whatever, it did make me feel a lot better. So yeah, I did meet some people on trail. There was like one older woman in her 60s said she promised her husband she would never hitch alone. So she would ask me beforehand, like whoever gets to this point first, we were going to wait for each other. So that kind of thing. And I think asking would always be great. You know, hopefully no one gets offended by that. Like, oh, I'm independent. I can do this myself. But a lot of us would, I'd be like, oh my God, thank you. Because sometimes I didn't want to interject in people's little group. But I sometimes like in certain areas, I didn't feel safe. So yeah, I think that would be really great. And if you're scared too, you can ask somebody.
Yeah, like, that's, I may be too. You like how I reframed that?
You're such a brave man, Jeffrey.
Yeah, so brave. Just in case those poor women need a brave man to hitchhike with.
It is. You look like you use, you know, I want to protect you. Yeah. So let me hop in.
I love
for
it.
For your sake.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. We went off on a tangent, but I am curious. Oh, yeah. I kind of wanted to think, pick your brain about how you think like a thru hike is going to be different. Whether are you training for it? What do you think the hardest parts are going to be versus an ultra marathon?
One really big unknown for me is, like what my daily distance is going to look like, because it's not unheard of for, you know, people who are not super trained beforehand to average 20 to 25, 28 miles a day. I would love to run some of the downs and flats. I'm going to roll very, very, very light. I'm using a Nashville pack that has has like a running vest, an ultra running vest style front. So it's, you can run with it. So in theory, I'd love to run some flats and downs, but I can't imagine what that would look like. I can't imagine running 20 to 30 miles a day every day, you know, 6 days a week for 5 months.
Oh, gosh.
I can't imagine. I don't know. I'm really, I'm keeping my end date. I'm giving like a 7 week swath of time as my estimate, because I have no idea what to guess. And I also know that as much as I love to rough it, I also love ending every backpacking trip with a stay in a nice hotel and with a massage or a spa. Or I love to like do the opposite after. So I know that I will be tempted in towns. I know I'll be tempted to zero. So I just, I don't know my timing, but I think the persistent effort is going to, I think it's going to be phases for me. I think it's initially going to be really difficult. I think it's not going to be the first couple weeks. And then I think I'm going to have a rough patch is my guess. And then I think my body's probably going to adapt to it. And I'm hopeful I can't imagine I won't be in the best shape of my life after the end of the trail. And I'm hopeful that I can roll that into a like fairly aggressive ultra season next year.
Wow.
But I think the persistent effort is going to be the hardest thing.
Yeah.
After the loneliness, just because I've done a 6-day stage race. That was like 130 miles over 6 days. So around like, you know, an average of like 20-ish miles a day. But that was only 6 days and I was freaking ruined.
Yeah. After.
So I'm also not starting crazy strong. I'm like, yes, I'm going to chill. I'm just going to hike in the beginning. Cause the one thing, like, there is a little, it's good pressure, but this also is my job. So,
right,
you know, yeah. I mean, I also like make my money off of the content that's going to be made around it, about a book that I might write about it, about any, you know, speeches that I write about it. And so I can't really go out there all cavalier like a, you know, a gap year 19-year-old might be able to. I really need to finish this. Or the worst case, if I don't finish it, I need to not finish it with a really, you know, interesting story. So yeah, I'm just being conservative. I still haven't answered your question.
No, this is good.
That's the thing I'm most worried about. I think the thing that will go better than expected is the social aspect. I think I'm going to really enjoy the solitude. And then on the other hand, I think it's going to end up being more social than I think it's going to be.
Yeah,
I think so too. Because like I said, there's, especially in the beginning, there's people everywhere. And then sometimes you're like, how do I get away from these people? You know, and then, but you can easily just go on your own. So I really love, you know, Diana was alone pretty much like the whole trail. Her trail was not a lot of people. PCT is like a lot of people, but it's still a little bit more remote versus the Appalachian Trail is like people everywhere all the time. I definitely think I hate running. Literally hate it. I just am not a runner. However, I started slow. My dad started with me, but we did like a slow pace. Like I said, I forget, but 6, 7, 8 miles a day, and then the same the next day. And then I just built up. And then a few months later, I'm in Oregon doing 4 miles a day running. Like, because it's almost like the flats and the down, it's too slow. You become to a point, like you get so in shape. I'm like, I need to go. And I would run. And I wanted to end and do a marathon. Never. Okay. I trained for a marathon years before I hiked the PCT. The longest I ran was 8 miles. I said, I'm done. This is the worst thing in the whole entire world. But then after the PCT, I'm like, I'm in such good shape. I could go run a marathon tomorrow. I mean, I really believe that in myself. So I definitely think that's an amazing plan. And if anybody asks about advice, that's one of the things I say is go slow in the beginning. You know, go build up. There's a huge group of people. I mean, I hope it's gotten better, but where there's like this ego of like making it to Lake Marana the first day, which is about 20 miles in. It's like people are trying to show off. Some people can do it fine, but some people are trying to show off and then they get injured. They tear their Achilles or they're, you know, they have stress fractures in their feet and then they get out a couple of weeks later and they're done.
I call them trail bags. They're everywhere, especially, I don't know, like how deep you are in the ultralight world. There is no more rotten place on earth than the ultralight thread on Reddit. They are brutal.
Yes. Yes.
How did God
God forbid you carry a bidet, let alone 5. Don't tell them that. You will be eaten alive, Jeffrey.
What are some of the things that they say?
You could be the foremost expert on, I don't know, ultralight backpacking stoves, and you could state a fact. You could start a Reddit thread that just states a fact, and 37 people in the first 60 seconds are going to tell you how wrong you are and all the reasons that you're wrong. Everybody, it reminds me of did you watch Parks and Rec, that Ron Swanson quote?
Yes.
Where he's like, I know more than you. That's the vibe.
Diana, I've told you this kind of thing all the time. And like I said, I hiked a few years ago. So, but I'm assuming this culture is the same. This is what I would get. So what day did you start? And what they're doing is they're trying to see how faster they are than me. How many miles are you hiking a day? And the thing is, they wouldn't be like, hey, what's your name? How you doing? Are you enjoying this beautiful weather? It was like, how slow are you, little Miss Piggy? You know, it was so...
Miss Pigpen.
Oh, what's your base weight? You know, that kind of thing. They just cared about these things. And then I kind of learned over time, like, all right, I got to stay away from those kinds of people. There's a lot of amazing other people on there or on the trail. But I posted my YouTube videos, wasn't expecting people to really watch them, but I look like to some people, some dumb, I don't know, unathletic. I don't know. I was like a gymnast and dancer and college cheerleader. So I don't know, but people just assumed I was unathletic and stupid. And the comments on my Facebook was like, she's not going to make it. You know, she's too weak and whatever. So just
Jen's so hurt by all
this. I am. I talk about it every time we have a podcast. I'm like, revenge. Yeah, no, yeah, but yeah. There's that community for sure that just wants to chime in from their couch saying how wrong you are and you don't get it. But I tell people just ignore that. Just enjoy.
Fueled her. Yeah. Feel the me. Fire.
Well, you said, yeah. Jeffrey, in your film that when someone tells you you can't do something, it makes you want to do it. And so
it lights freaking fire under my ass so fast.
You can't do it. You're not going to finish.
Jeffrey,
so
you suck
trying?
So bad. You cannot hike.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I'm the Bush and Banner girls.
Oh, Lord. Have you been training at all, like doing any hikes, or are you just going to show up?
So that was the goal, and then we decided to move. Moving's a long story. We were originally going to move back to Salt Lake City this fall, and then all kinds of life things happened, and we were like, you know what, let's just move now, and let's do Denver instead. And it just totally sent any running schedule I had hoped for to the grave. And I just did the Run the Rocks in Moab. It's a fun 3-day stage race. So I was running a little bit for that. And I've been running, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, which is just kind of like my maintenance running. But I haven't, I haven't stepped it up. And I leave in 3 weeks.
No, so. I didn't prepare at all. I had back surgery a few months before. And I was on steroids and had gained some weight. And I wasn't allowed to do any physical activity. So I was a little bit I was actually at my heaviest of my entire life the day I started the Pacific Crest Trail. And I met people who finished who had never even backpacked one day in their life, never even went on like a 5-mile hike. So it's completely doable. It's just, going slow, knowing your body. Take those 0 days. I loved getting to a hotel, getting a room by myself, taking a shower, a bath, you know, binge watching some stupid show like 90 Day Fiancé on TV. And it was the most amazing thing.
You're freaking terrible. Jeffrey, I was told you, and you even just mentioned it, you wanted to write a book about this. You're thinking about it.
I'm thinking about it. I'm getting it out there. I'm chatting with those agent types. I don't know anything about the publishing world. So I totally feel like a fish out of water. I know that I'm going to have a wild story to tell. And I couldn't decide how I wanted to tell it. And I think I decided to go with a book. I think it's...
Can I give you some advice?
All the advice.
She wrote a book.
I heard.
Okay, so I wrote a book. It's called A Walk Through Neverland. And it's based on the Pacific Northwest Trail. When I did the trail, I didn't have any intention of writing a book.
Okay.
But I did something that literally saved me and made the book writing process so much more enjoyable and easy. So, and I did this just for my own sake. And I was very religious about it. While I was hiking at night, before I went to sleep, when I was tucked into my sleeping bag, every single night, I wrote down 2 sentences. And I wrote down what camp I was at, how many miles I hiked that day, and 1 or 2 sentences about anything about the day, who I met, a lake maybe I skinny dipped in, something I ate. Anything big that happened in 1 or 2 sentences, I couldn't commit to anything more than that. It was just 2 sentences. And then I would drift off to sleep. So at the end, it took me 74 days. So at the end, I had 74 of these sentences. And it was all, you know, by day. So it was like the date and how many miles, everything was organized. And then I went through and I was able just to quickly gloss over it. And then I picked the top 20 things that I thought could be great chapters. And then I put them in order. And then because I did that, when I reread it, I was like, oh my God, I forgot that happened. I forgot that. And it was just made it so much easier. And then I just made chapters out of the 20 biggest things that happened. And it made it so easy. Instead of like going in and rewatching videos that you shot. And it's going to be a clusterfuck at the end. But this in my notes on my phone, 2 sentences. And then because I wrote the book 2 years later, it made it so simple. So I would really commit for that.
Advice.
Yeah. Even if it is just for yourself, just for you to have. And yeah, it saved me. If I didn't do that, I could not have written a book because there's just too much, you know? So yeah, that's what you should do.
Yeah. Well, even just, you know, just been trying to work on my writing in general and even just starting to journal and stuff. And
yeah,
it took me forever to get over the hurdle of, you know, I'd sit down to write and like, I just couldn't, like, I literally wouldn't get started. I would sit down at the computer and like, it literally just would never happen.
Yeah.
And it's because I wanted it to be perfect when it came out. And once I finally, one of my friends gave me really great advice, said, write as though you're telling whatever it is you're talking about, the story of whatever you're talking about, to your best friend, and just word vomit. Don't worry about structure. It doesn't matter what you said or how you said it. Like, just get it out and then go back. And that has like, that was really big for me. I stopped second guessing every, you know, I was trying to like write perfect sentences before the idea was even out of my brain.
No, it's a zero draft that nobody will ever read. It's just for you, just to get the notes out, get it out of your head. And then you spend the next year crafting the sentences and the literature and making it digestible. But yeah, just vomit it all out on a page. And then the fun part is reworking it and adding the descriptions and all that. But most people don't even, they look at the big picture, almost like a through hike. They look at the big picture and it's so terrifying that it's literally like, if I can sit down and write one paragraph a day, oh man, I'm great. Because then at night I'm thinking about it and then I wake up with ideas, and it's just the physical act of just doing it just a little bit every single day. And ultimately, look, that's what I did, and I'm done, you know? So just like a through hike. Wow, I give great advice.
Yeah,
I
you do.
To my own shit, Jen.
Was this your first book?
This was my first book. Yeah. I've been a journalist in the film industry for like 15 years.
Okay.
And I took on this trail. And then 2 years after I finished, I went down a mentally negative space.
Mm-hmm.
And the book was something to adjust my thinking and get me thinking about something else. And so it was very fun to write. It was super fun, and it was, I hate to say this because people get mad at me, but it was easy just because I lived it. I didn't have to create characters. The characters already existed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from those 1 to 2 sentences, I was able to relive the whole experience very quickly and organize it. And that's why I was able to write it pretty quickly. So I wrote the book in 3 months, and then it took a year to sit down and make it not suck. But I'm excited for you. I'm excited for your whole adventure, and you're such an entertaining guy, and I just I'm like a huge fan right now.
Thanks. I'm excited. I think it's I don't know, we'll see. I mean, the thing is, I'll just, you know, we'll see the reality as it is. I learned that lesson. Well, I had a period in my life where I decided I wanted to convert a school bus into an RV. And I saw that on your
YouTube channel. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how my YouTube channel started. And it was so awkward in the beginning because I was making YouTube content as like teaching people how to do this, like as though I was the expert. And it felt so weird. I think I was like 3 videos in and I was like, I don't know who that guy is. And so I switched gears and I was like, I just took a new approach of like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, but I'm not an idiot and I can probably figure it out. So you want to watch? And that has been so much more fruitful for me. So, you know, I spent lots of time backpacking and fast packing, but I've never through hiked before. I'm not an expert. I for sure will end up in some ridiculous situations that could have been avoidable, but that's part of life, you know.
That's why people love you, because nobody wants to.
Well, that's not true.
That's why me and Jen, nobody else, me and Jen like you, but because you are, real. I feel like.
Well, that was a huge impetus for. We're kind of taking this backward, but that was a huge impetus for the film, because when I was, just like you watching all the through hiking YouTube channels, I watched every piece of media that existed about 100 mile ultra marathons. I watched every film. I watched all the YouTube videos. I read all the books. I just, you know, dove in. But it was all about like elite athletes, like, you know, the best of the best, which is amazing and inspiring and fascinating. And I mean, you know, I'm amazing in all those ways, but there was nobody like me. There were no films about, you know, chubby 35-year-old gingers trying to do this. And I think that's, what it's any success it has enjoyed is due to, is just that I think that didn't exist when it first came out. Luckily, things are changing. You know, I mean, the fact that Brooks Running, one of the biggest running companies in the U.S., sponsors a plus size trail runner, like that wouldn't have happened, right, 10 years ago, you know, and it's still not happening for a lot of companies, and I get it. But you know, there's also an interesting shift where you know, sponsored athletes are now, they're having some social media pressure because it's they kind of can't avoid it anymore. That's it's kind of too vital, yeah, for at least, you know, the brand's goals. And so it's interesting to see a lot of these athletes having to, you know, leave their comfort zones. But it's so fun. Do you know Nia Atkins by chance? She is one of Brooks' sponsored runners. She's a track runner, almost definitely to be future Olympian. But there's so much hidden talent in the sponsored athlete. She's also an amazing singer and dancer. So we made a silly dance reel together. I don't know what we're talking about now. I've taken us at least like three tangents off of whatever our topic was.
Well, I love your dance videos, and I want to start recreating them. So. I'll get you to do it too, Diana.
No, yes. Can't dance.
Let's get in person and we'll do one together.
Okay, I'll meet you when you come into Echo Chalet on Lake Tahoe on the PCT. Okay. All right.
Oh yeah, meet him, Jen.
Well, yeah,
Jen will bring you like a real some toilet paper, some nice basket full of all these.
I'll bring you my son's little travel toilet.
Fresh bidet. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'll cover you with some leaves, give you ultimate privacy.
I think my husband might come join me in Tahoe, and I think I might spend a couple days there. We love Tahoe.
You don't want me to third wheel, is what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm probably going to be there for at least a couple days. So yes, we insist.
That's a good place. Diana and I also did the Tahoe Rim Trail, so it does that same portion of the PCT. And it's an awesome little place.
And Desolation is in there, right? Is that near Tahoe, Desolation Wilderness?
Yep, that's
on the west side of the lake, right?
Yep, that's the same area. So kind of when you, one of like a good place to resupply, it's called Echo Chalet. That's where the Desolation Wilderness portion is. Okay. It's really beautiful. You're in for some treats.
I know one question I have for you. How often, if ever, did you cowboy camp?
So I started the trail saying I would never in a million years ever do that. Like, everyone's a psycho. And then it's so weird how quickly you can assimilate to the environment. I did it almost all the time in the desert and even in parts of the Sierra Nevada, all the time. It's the first time I did it, I accidentally left my my trekking poles at a restaurant. But I need my trekking poles to set up my tent. Oh. So I was actually with some people that night and they were all cowboy camping, but I was going to set up my tent because I don't want snakes or scorpions crawling on my face. No, thank you. Right. But I forgot my trekking poles. And so they were like, Jen, do it. I wound up getting my trekking poles back, but I had already committed and it was amazing. I was hooked. Yeah. For one reason, in the desert, it's easy to cowboy camp because it's like the weather, like it's just, you're not really going to get hit by a storm unless you know it's coming in the middle of the night. So, and the stars are out and you're listening to the coyotes and it's just really serene, but also out of laziness, you know, putting your tent up and away every single day for 5 months gets annoying. I mean, it gets to be like this tedious thing. So if you can eliminate steps, if you do a hard day, you just want to get into your tent or your sleeping bag, you know, so it kind of becomes I'm feeling lazy. I'm just going to throw my sleeping bag on the ground. So I recommend it. Nothing ever happened. And I even shocked myself. Me and some people were doing a night hike, a night climb, because it was like 105 degrees in the day. And we were like, we're not climbing that huge mountain in the day. We all waited till the sun went down and we're hiking and we see scorpions literally going across the trail, hundreds through this climb. And I still cowboy camped, even knowing that was out there, because you get so tired. I think you're just like, it just doesn't bother you. It didn't bother me, which was crazy because the first day I was like, I am not. I am not cowboy camping. Are you wanting to cowboy camp or nervous?
So I have only done it a few times, and I've liked it. I can't decide what tent to take. I have a Z-Pax problem, so I have an option. I have options.
Okay, I use a Z-Pax tent.
I was,
But they're not for everybody.
No, they're not. I like them, but no, they're not.
I like them, but I actually hate them, so.
Well, everyone has a complicated relationship with Z-Packs, yeah. I think, don't they? I adore their tents, and I have literally almost all of them. I was originally like, I'm going to take my duplex, because right. I want to have space, I want to be comfortable.
Yeah.
But then I realized that I found this Nashville pack, and it's pretty small, and I don't think that's really viable. So I also have an Altiplex. Do you know what that is? That's kind of like the one person. Yeah, yes. Yeah. It's the taller one. It's good for tall people.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what I'm going to roll with. But I also have just a tarp. And like, if I'm going to cowboy camp a lot, I'd rather just take the tarp, because it's literally like two little things this big. It's so small. But I think... I don't know how much I'm going to want to cowboy camp.
Yeah. I mean, in the desert, definitely did it a lot. Sierra Nevada, when the weather was great, it was super cold, but if the weather was beautiful, I did it all the time. And, you know, I can't tell you what to do, because I know some people who just used tarps and used not a lot of shelter, but I loved having my shelter, because when it's storming and raining and super cold and windy, I liked having that little bit of protection.
Yeah.
I know I used a Solplex the first time. I don't think they sell Solplex anymore. And then I have the one you have that I used on the Tahoe Rim Trail. You know, you're a lot bigger than I am, and it's even kind of tight for me, but if you can make it work, it saves weight. And you can go give the middle finger to all those ultralight jerks on Reddit. You're like, look how ultralight I am. Do you see how big, how tall I am? And I'm using this little tent. Like,
oh my God.
Step your game up, everybody.
Whatever. I could tell them that I used like a handkerchief and four strings for shelter, and they'd be like, it's too heavy. I use one ply of toilet paper for my shelter. Like, they're so over the top.
You know, I think what's good about through hiking, though, is that you can make decisions along the way. You could be 100 miles in and be like, this sucks. And you can have somebody mail you something at like the next checkpoint. So that's what's cool, is you can keep changing your gear to, you know, you're like, this isn't working.
I'm struggling to not overplan, because that is advice that almost everyone has given me, is that like, I wish I would have sent myself less boxes. I didn't need to overplan all this stuff. I was just obsessing earlier about my bear canister, and I know there's lots of options. Like,
yeah,
Jen gave me some really good advice one time. She says, you can plan all you want, but it's never going to go the way you expect it or the way you thought. It's always going to be different. So you plan the best of your ability, but no, it ain't going to be what you have in your head, you know, a lot of it. It's going to be, it could be better, you know, or worse.
Some days worse. But like, you definitely have shown that you can adapt. And I think that's the best thing people can go into, is just adapting. There's a lot of annoying technical things. Yeah. With bear canisters, how to do this and whatever. There's a million people that can answer the question for you, or you can write me, like I'll help the best I can. But planning is just part of the fun, is just kind of, I think, going with the flow. And I didn't mail myself one box, and you know, it all worked. I ate, I didn't starve. So all good.
Yeah. All good.
Yeah,
Jeff, how can people follow you? Like, how can they get in touch with you? Your website, your Instagram? How can people be part of your world?
I'm everywhere. I'm at Jeffrey Binney on all the socials. And my website is JJB. As in boy, .life, L-I-F-E.
Will you be posting YouTube videos of your hike?
Yes, I will be. That's another interesting thing that I'm interested to see how it pans out. You know, just on these, like the Nepal trip was obviously well documented. My videographer and editor was with me as well. And even in just like 7 days, by the seventh day, I wanted to throw that camera off the side of a mountain. I was so tired of messing with it and carrying it and getting it out and putting it away and turning it on and turning it off and panicking, because I was just over it.
Right.
And so I have these big dreams of I'm going to do a story per day, like on the trail, and I'm definitely shooting stuff for YouTube, which I won't be editing as well. So yeah, I'll be everywhere.
Everywhere.
And then okay. Hopefully there's a book and a new talk afterward. But well, we got to see what happens first. That's the weird thing about making a documentary or planning to write a nonfiction book. You can only kind of guess where the story may go. And then after the fact, find the story with whatever actually happened.
Well, yeah. I'm really excited to watch. I just wanted to bring up one last thing. So before I watched your film Once Is Enough, I definitely was thinking the title came from you did one ultra marathon and that was enough. Like that was what I was thinking it was about. But you get to the end and you talk about a quote from Mae West, because at first you're talking about like the time is now to achieve your dreams. And you said, Mae West said, you only live once, but if you do it right, once is enough. And I was like, oh dang, that is not what I thought he meant when you was saying once is enough. Just to like wrap this up, do you want to kind of speak on that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy. Everything incredible that's ever happened in my life, all my biggest achievements and successes have all been because I did something that I wasn't expected to do, that I was expected not to be able to do. And like, that's when the magic happens, when you just throw caution to the wind and live life. I'm getting ready to embrace a motto that I use all the time. And I guess, well, my followers have pointed out how often I use it, and I think I'm going to embrace it. It might be the title of the book even. I constantly say, you know, let's go tits out. It's a tits out kind of day. That like throw caution to the wind. Let's be silly. Let's just see what happens and live life. That's what that quote means to me. Like living life tits out, just doing the thing, not missing out on life because you're scared.
Right. I will read a book called Tits Out any day.
The title will unquestionably change. It's currently Tits Out, a thru-hiking tale of adventure, mischief, and general tomfoolery.
Oh, wow.
It's ridiculous.
And put like an asterisk and say, but you must read this topless.
Right. No. Obviously, you must read this
with your tits out. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we just want to say thank you so much for doing this because we know you're a busy guy.
Well, thank you for having me. When are we going to go on a trip together?
Well, when you're lucky, that day might come.
How to get lucky. But
when you're done with your Pacific Crest Trail hike, I think we'd like to have you back and talk about what it was like, you know, because now we know what you think it's going to be
how
like.
How foolish I was beforehand.
How foolish and how you're, you know, scared to use the bathroom. Mm-hmm. But I would be interested to hear how it actually was. Yeah,
absolutely. So, yeah. And I never asked how, you know, Megan.
Oh, Megan, man, I knew her for 1 week and she turned into one of my favorite people.
I think that's how she does.
Yeah. We went on it was a women's retreat in Montana where I lived in the woods for a week.
We got
like a roadkill deer together and she just got in there.
What's her name? I'm blanking on her name, but didn't she do
Callie Russell.
Yeah.
Callie Russell, Jesse Krebs. Yeah.
Jesse. I think it's a masterclass. Have you seen her survival skills? Yeah, it's so good. Yeah.
She was on our podcast a few weeks ago.
Incredible.
Yeah.
How cool.
Yeah, she's but Megan, man, I was almost intimidated by her. Like how she just would. Do you know Jesse Krebs? Have you met her?
Me? No, I just know her from her masterclass. No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. She's amazing, man. She's so smart.
Oh yeah. And even on the podcast, she like commanded and I was like taking notes, like listening to her survival skills tips.
This is neither here nor there. Do you know why I was watching her masterclass? I almost did Naked and Afraid.
Wait, oh my God. They were trying to cast me and her.
Really?
They were trying to cast us as well.
How did it go? I don't even know if we can really talk about this.
No. No.
I was like, no, I'm not.
I'm afraid to be naked. Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah. I ain't doing this. Yeah. I think they're desperate over there if they come to us.
And we were laughing because we also had Callie on the show last year. Uh-huh. But years ago, Alone wrote me to be on the show because I did video, you know, I did my video photography because they need people to work a camera and talk to it.
Yeah.
And I was joking, please, I hope they're not listening. I was like, they must be really desperate because I would literally die in the first 5 minutes. Like, there's no way I'm equipped. But I mean, Callie and Jesse are the ones that are equipped. But they wrote me and I'm like, they must be running into people signing up for this.
They're running out of people. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, they're clearly desperate if they're barking up our tree, right?
And we can remove this if you can't talk about it. Are you thinking about doing it still?
No, I think I might have been one of their alternates because they weren't making a decision, but they also wouldn't release me. And it got to the point where I had to book, waiting on contracts and I just couldn't hold it anymore. So I would guess I was probably, I have no idea, but just from what I know from the industry, I probably just wasn't their top choice. And they're probably just holding on to me in case they,
someone backs out. Yeah.
But I also was pretty honest during the psych exam. And then I was like, I don't know if I would do it. I was like, I never was like, oh yes, I would love to do this. And I'm a definite yes.
Right. Yeah.
And in my psych exam, he seemed very like focused on that fact. So that also may have shot me in the foot. But it's true. And I didn't want to hoodwink them into thinking it was my dream. And then at the end be like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, he's not ultralight enough.
Yeah.
I actually was in Patagonia with Megan when I got the email at dinner and I was checking my email during dinner rudely. And immediately, loudly, proclaimed, oh, fuck no, and slammed my phone down. And everyone was like, what's that about? And I was like, you will not believe what's in my inbox. And then I thought I assumed it was a mass casting email. I got all of those from being an actor. And then I realized it was a personalized letter to me. And it really quickly started to eat at me because I was like, why not? The reason is because you don't want to be naked on camera, which is a totally understandable fear. Right. By the way, that's a totally reasonable fear. But it's so antithetical to everything that I talk about and do and feel. And then it pissed me off. It really pissed me off that it made me so uncomfortable. And so I explored the opportunity almost out of spite.
Yes, I love that. Do you know Jeff Jenkins? He has that Nat Geo show.
I have a friend, Jeff Jenkins, from college, but it's not the same one.
Well, we interviewed him.
Never Say Never.
Yeah, his show is Never Say Never, where he travels around the world. And he's an overweight black man. So that goes into his show about fighting stereotypes, kind of similar to just people don't think that he would be doing certain adventures or travels. So we interviewed him and he did some crazy stuff. But one of the things he struggled with the most is he went to Japan to do sumo wrestling and he didn't want to take his shirt off. And that was he was doing so many, rock climbing and scuba diving. I mean, he was doing crazy stuff and he had one of the hardest times because they wanted, they wanted him to be shirtless to do his sumo wrestling match. And he really had a hard time. At first, when he heard about it, he's like, I'll do sumo wrestling, but I will not take my shirt off. And anyway, but that's a real struggle. So he reminds me of you because he's like, what am I teaching these people, who's watching my show? I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Well, I just Googled it. I've never seen it. It looks freaking amazing. That looks awesome. Well, and I guess I left out the most important part. That's how Tits Out came to be was, it started with a post where I posted myself shirtless. And so for me, Tits Out has a secondary meaning because unquestionably that was the thing I was most self-conscious about as a little fat kid, where my moobs, my man tits, whatever you want to call them. And so it feels so satisfying to kind of reclaim that and be like, I do have a little extra chub and I don't care. I'm not going to miss out on traveling. I'm not going to miss out on hiking. I'm not going to miss out on this stuff because of that. No, it's not ideal. No, I would be healthier if I weighed less, but I would also be missing out on a lot of life if I didn't do anything until conditions were perfect.
Exactly. Because conditions are never perfect.
Ever.
And even her and I talk about stuff like that all the time. Like, things are just never right. And I'm sick of that. You know, I'm a mother now. So I had to put all my thru hiking on hold, or, you know, and that's been really hard for me. And I'm like, oh, maybe in 15 years. And, you know, yeah, I'm not going to leave for that long now, but what else can I do to help satisfy this adventure in me?
It's so freaking cool that you do that, because we don't have children, probably won't have children, but I was nannying was always my side job. I worked in an after special needs preschool, and I've worked with kids tons. So I don't know what it's like to be an adult, to be a parent. I also don't know what it's like to be an adult. Oh, Freud would love that one. I don't know what it's like to be a parent, but I have a pretty good idea. And I don't know how parents, especially moms, take care of themselves, because, well, so many of them don't. That's the answer. Many don't. So that's so freaking cool that you are, you know, taking the time to like make sure that you're still able to do this stuff that at the end of the day allows you, gives you the mental space to be able to mom, you know, like
it's hard. It's such a hard balance. Yeah. But it's like, I deserve, like, I'm an individual, like I am a mom, but I still am my own person who has dreams. And, you know, it's been hard. There's times and places. I'm in a time where I can't go hike for 5 months. But I'll get there. But now I'm thinking about, oh, maybe I can do 1 week here. Or even this podcast is so inspiring for me. And it's just reminding me that, you know, I still am that person, and I still can be that person. I just can't be, you know, hiking for a while, but I can meet people for trail magic on the PCT. And that's my little contribution. So I'll be out there slinging beers around.
You should come join me for a few days. If you can get away, come.
I would love to. Like,
how long does it take to go South Lake Tahoe to, what's the town on like the northwest corner?
Northwest.
Tahoe Lake City?
Like Incline. Yeah, I mean, there's Tahoe City, there's Incline, but South Lake is right there south.
What part do you live in? One of my best friends from high school is in Reno. So that's the only time I know.
Yes, I'm from Reno. I technically live in Sparks, which is right outside of Reno. But I went to school here and grew up here. So I moved away. I just came back like a couple months ago. I've been gone for like 13 years. So I'm back. And I would love to meet you. But and you're going to be super busy, but I'll message you on Instagram, you know, and if it works out, you know. You might be so famous, you will be like, who's this stupid whimsical woman messaging me?
Stop this whimsical woman.
That's my name.
I actually think so many friends have said like, oh yeah, I'm going to come hike with you for a week or whatever. But I don't think I've told everyone, but I don't think they totally understand the logistics, because it's like, I can't tell you when we're going to start until maybe like 6 days before.
Yes.
Max.
Yeah.
So you have to be able, you have to be flexible. You have to not be able to book your ticket until, you know, then. And so I think that's going to be harder than my friends.
I don't like people hiking with me, because I feel like liable for them. And a lot of them don't do this. So then they're slow because they're just starting. And I feel like they hold me down. So I'm always like, I don't want to hike with anybody. Don't meet me. I don't want you. I know you're being nice, but I don't want you.
Yeah, I put a 2-year embargo on taking anyone on their first backpacking trip, because 2 trips in a row, the other person cried.
Yeah, they usually do.
Just because it was hard. I mean, you know, we're used to it. But if you're not, like, you know, there's sometimes rough patches where you just want to be a freaking trailhead.
Oh my God, that's so fun. Just giving them like the most traumatic time of their lives. Good job, Jeffrey. Yeah.
I also, that travel company that I work with, they very kindly invited some of their top hosts to Costa Rica. So I got to go meet other people who are doing the same thing. I didn't realize it was going to be such a funny question, but I asked the question, how many people had cried on their trips that they had hosted. And the answer was 0 from all of them. They were like, it clearly isn't 0 for yours. And I was like, no, it's at least 7 or 8 times a trip.
Oh my God. No.
But it's because on my trips, people are pushing themselves. Like, there's always like a pinnacle. And Nepal was difficult. We hiked up to the Annapurna base.
Yeah, I saw that.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't remember how high, but way higher than I've ever been. And so that's why. sometimes there's tears.
Freaking hilarious. Well, you're going to kill it. Yeah. I can't wait. Do you mind sharing your start date?
Yeah. The 23rd, as I understand it, you can start anytime after your permit date. Is that correct?
I think so. I know they've changed some rules, but I think you can at least start after, just not before.
Yeah. So we'll see. I might not hit the trail till the 24th or the 25th, but we'll see. I don't know. I think I'm going to do Scout and Frodo. Did you do a Scout and Frodo?
I did not. So just, I know we can just talk for hours. I didn't know what they look like. I heard the most amazing stories about them. I'm hiking in the Sierra Nevada, you know, months later after my start date, eating by myself. And these two gentlemen are coming the other way. And they're like, hey, do you mind if we stop and eat with you? And I'm like, sure. They're super friendly. This guy pulls out. He's like, oh, my wife made all these homemade brownies. And he's like, oh, she would love your outfit because I had a lot of colorful backpacks and clothing. I got my trail name Starburst from that. And I'm like, sure, I'm eating. And then the other gentleman after a while was like, you don't know who you're talking to, do you? And I was like, no. He's like, I was like, how do you know? You know, how do you know that? And he's like, because this guy's famous. And anyway, it was a scout. He was just backpacking or whatever. And yeah, we took a little video together and he was just amazing. And I just heard the most amazing things. You're going to get that culture. You're going to meet other hikers. It's more about everyone's excited. And yeah,
my instinct is to not do that. My instinct was to like get a hotel. And I was like, no, that's not why you're doing this. Like, you're doing this to have these experiences. And
we're going
to
call the hotels and tell them, don't allow Jeffrey into your hotel. Don't let him in. Kick
him
out.
Sleep in the woods.
Kick him out. He's bad news. Kick him out. You don't want him in.
I mean, I didn't do it, but I've just heard the most amazing things. And it was just the most wonderful man. He wrote a book. His father recently passed away, but he just shares a lot of insight. He just is one of those people that you could sit and listen to, has so much wisdom. And I mean, I feel like, you know, maybe you can, you know, push, you know, I think it would be really fun to do. I wish I could go back and do it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Okay. You're going to have a blast. It's going to be amazing. We'll be watching.
Did you do trail days?
Yes, I couldn't do trail days, I think, when I was on the trail. I'm trying to remember. But I came back when I was years later to just like visit. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. I missed it. I had a really tight – I took too many zeros in the beginning. And then when it was getting to the end, I'm like, I'm literally not going to make it home. So I was pushing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But trail days is a blast. So definitely try to hit that if you can.
Cool. That's the plan.
Yeah. All right.
So we know.
I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm so excited. I have like 3,000 more questions, but next
okay.
time.
Okay. Yes.
Have a great time. And just remember one thing. What? Keep those tits out.
I don't know any other way to operate other than tits out.
Oh my gosh.
I love it.
Well, yeah, Jeffrey, feel free to like write us or me or whatever with any questions you have. Sure. I'd love to help. And I'm really excited for you. So
thanks.
Yay.
I will.
Okay. Is there anything you want to say to the listeners one last time? Or do you feel pretty good? No, we're good.
No, they heard me talk enough. But thanks for having me. This was good fun. Yeah. I'm excited to do it again. Hopefully I have some wisdom and not horror stories.
Yes, you will. No. You will. There's it's a lot of fun to be had. You'll be addicted, I think. For sure.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Jeffrey. Good luck. We're all rooting for you.
Good luck moving. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.